We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild. Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is continuing coverage of United States versus Sean Diddy Combs from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Picture this. You're Sean Diddy Combs, hip-hop mogul extraordinaire, sitting in federal custody at the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn. And today, June 11th, 2025, you catch a break. No courtroom proceedings, no prosecutors painting you as a monster, no witnesses testifying about your alleged freak-offs. Just you, your thoughts, and whatever passes for lunch at MDC Brooklyn. It's probably the best day you've had in weeks, which tells you everything about how spectacularly your life has imploded. The man who once threw the most legendary parties in the Hamptons, who dated Jennifer Lopez when she was still Jenny from the block, who built a billion-dollar empire on swagger and champagne dreams, now spends his days in a concrete cell wondering if his legal team can pull off a miracle. Federal racketeering charges have a funny way of humbling even the most untouchable celebrities. Let me back up and explain how we got here, because this story is wilder than anything you'd see on reality TV. Sean Combs faces federal charges of racketeering conspiracy, sex trafficking by force, fraud or coercion, and transportation to engage in prostitution. The feds are essentially saying he ran a criminal enterprise that makes the plots of most crime dramas look tame. These aren't just accusations from random people on social media. This is the United States government saying one of hip-hop's biggest icons allegedly orchestrated a years-long pattern of abuse and exploitation. The trial's been running since May, and yesterday, June 10th, featured some particularly damaging testimony. A woman testifying under the pseudonym Jane faced cross-examination the defense attorney. Jane's described as a former girlfriend of Combs, and her testimony has been brutal. She's talked about events she calls hotel nights that prosecutors refer to as freak-offs. The defense spent Tuesday trying to poke holes in her story, focusing on text messages between her and Combs, financial arrangements, and trying to paint a picture of a consensual relationship gone sour rather than the coercive nightmare prosecutors describe. Think about the cognitive dissonance here. This is the same Sean Combs who gave us I'll Be Missing You, who mourned Biggie on MTV, who taught a generation how to dance in shiny suits. Now prosecutors are painting him as someone who allegedly used his wealth and power to create what they call a criminal enterprise. The indictment reads like something out of a nightmare, describing elaborate schemes to control and exploit women, using everything from financial manipulation to physical force. The cross-examination of Jane wrapped up early on Tuesday around 3 p.m., with the defense expected to finish grilling her by Thursday morning. The defense attorney has been doing what defense attorneys do, trying to undermine her credibility, pointing out inconsistencies, suggesting she's motivated by money or revenge. It's textbook stuff. But when you're dealing with allegations this serious, textbook might not be enough. What makes this case particularly fascinating from a legal perspective is how the feds have structured it. They're not just going after individual acts. They're using RICO statutes, the same laws that took down the mob, arguing that Combs ran an ongoing criminal enterprise. It's the legal equivalent of saying he wasn't just a bad boyfriend or even an abusive partner, but that he allegedly orchestrated a system of exploitation that that involved multiple victims over years. The prosecution claims they might call their final witnesses next week, which means we're heading toward the endgame. After months of testimony, dozens of witnesses, and more salacious details than a season of Scandal, the government's almost done making its case. Then it'll be the defense's turn to try to convince a jury that one of the most powerful men in entertainment is being railroaded. Here's what kills me about this whole situation. Combs had everything. Money, fame, respect, influence. He could have been remembered as the guy who revolutionized hip-hop marketing, who discovered incredible talent, who built Bad Boy Records into a powerhouse. Instead, he's fighting for his freedom in a federal courthouse, with each day bringing new allegations that make the last ones look tame by comparison. The details that have emerged during this trial paint a picture of someone who allegedly weaponized the very things that made him successful. The lavish lifestyle, the exclusive parties, the promise of career advancement all allegedly became tools of control and coercion. Witnesses have described a world where luxury masked exploitation, where what looked like generosity was allegedly a trap. Jane's testimony has been particularly harrowing. Without getting into graphic details, she's described a pattern of behavior that prosecutors say exemplifies how Combs allegedly operated. The hotel nights she referenced weren't romantic getaways, but allegedly orchestrated events where she claims she was coerced into sexual acts. The defense, of course, disputes this characterization, arguing these were consensual encounters between adults in a relationship. The text messages that came up during cross-examination Tuesday are apparently explicit, which the defense is using to suggest Jane was a willing participant. But prosecutors argue that these messages need to be understood in the context of an allegedly coercive relationship where saying no wasn't really an option. It's the kind of complex dynamic that makes these cases so difficult to prosecute and so painful to watch unfold in public. What's striking about following this trial is how it's forced a reckoning with the culture that allowed someone like Combs to allegedly operate with impunity. For so long, the music industry, Hollywood, the fashion world, they all celebrated him, collaborated with him, looked the other way when rumors surfaced. Now, those same industries are scrambling to distance themselves, acting shocked that the warning signs they ignored turned out to mean something. Remember, this is the man who practically invented the hip-hop mogul archetype. Before Diddy, rappers might get rich, but they didn't necessarily become executives, fashion designers, liquor magnates. He showed everyone how to leverage street credibility into boardroom power. He made being a businessman as cool as being an artist, and allegedly, he used all that power in the worst possible ways. The federal prosecutors have been methodical in building their case. They've brought in financial records showing how money allegedly flowed to keep victims quiet or dependent. They presented communications that allegedly show Combs directing others to facilitate these freak-offs. They've painted a picture of an organization that existed not just to make music or throw parties, but allegedly to enable and cover up systematic abuse. Yesterday's early end proceedings at 3 p.m. might have been a relief for everyone involved. These trials are exhausting, emotionally draining marathons. Jane has been on the stand for days, reliving allegedly traumatic experiences while defense attorneys try to discredit her. Combs sits there in his federal blues, a far cry from the designer suits he used to rock, watching his life get dissected in open court. The defense strategy seems pretty clear at this point. They're going after the credibility of witnesses like Jane, suggesting they're motivated by money, fame, or revenge. They're trying to reframe allegedly coercive relationships as complicated but consensual arrangements between adults who knew what they were getting into. They're painting Combs as a successful black man being torn down by a system that's always been hostile to black success. And that last part is particularly complicated because there's truth to the idea that successful black men face unfair scrutiny and prejudice. But prosecutors would argue that invoking legitimate concerns about racial justice doesn't excuse alleged criminal behavior. It's possible to acknowledge systemic racism while also holding individuals accountable for their alleged actions. The timing of today's break in proceedings is interesting. After intense testimony yesterday, everyone gets a breather. Jane doesn't have to face more cross-examination immediately. The jury gets to process what they've heard. Combs gets a day without having to sit through more damaging testimony. Sometimes these breaks can shift momentum in a trial, giving one side or the other time to regroup and adjust strategy. Looking at the bigger picture, this trial represents something larger than just one man's alleged crimes. It's about power, exploitation, and the systems that enable both. It's about how we treat victims who come forward against powerful men. It's about whether fame and money can shield you from consequences forever, or if eventually the bill comes due. The prosecution suggesting they might wrap up their case next week means we're entering the crucial phase. Once they rest, the defense gets its shot. Will Combs testify in his own defense? It would be risky, but might be necessary. Can they present witnesses who paint a different picture of these relationships? Can they create enough reasonable doubt to get an acquittal? Here's what I keep thinking about. Somewhere in an alternate universe, there's a Sean Combs who used his power differently, who built his empire without allegedly exploiting anyone, who's spending today planning his next business venture instead of sitting in federal custody. That version of Diddy is probably still throwing those legendary parties, still dating beautiful women, still living his best life. But in our universe, he's learning what happens when allegedly treating people like disposable objects catches up with you. The most damning part of the prosecution's case isn't any single allegation. It's the pattern they're establishing. One victim could be a misunderstanding or a vengeful ex. Multiple victims describing similar experiences backed up by financial records and communications, that's harder to explain away. That's why RICO cases are so powerful. They let prosecutors show the forest, not just the trees. As we wait for the trial to resume, probably tomorrow, based on what the court indicated Tuesday, the question becomes what else the prosecution has up its sleeve. They've already presented devastating testimony. They've shown financial records. They've established patterns. What final witnesses could they have that would seal the deal before they rest their case? The defense faces an uphill battle. Federal prosecutors don't bring cases they don't think they can win, especially high-profile ones like this. The conviction rate in federal court is over 90%. Those aren't odds you want to face, even with the best lawyers money can buy. And Combs has good lawyers, make no mistake. But good lawyers can only do so much when the evidence is what it allegedly is. This case matters beyond just what happens to Sean Combs. It sends a message about accountability in industries that have long protected powerful men. It shows that victims might actually be believed, even when they're going up against someone with unlimited resources. It demonstrates that fame and fortune don't make you untouchable forever. Think about all the people who enabled this alleged behavior over the years. The associates who allegedly helped arrange these freak-offs. The staff who allegedly knew what was happening but stayed silent. The industry figures who heard rumors but kept booking him for events, kept doing business with him, kept treating him like royalty. They're all part of this story too, even if they're not on trial. What happens next will be fascinating to watch. If the prosecution rests next week, the defense will have to decide whether to put on a case or simply argue the government hasn't met its burden. If they do present a defense, who will they call? What story will they tell? How do you defend against allegations this serious and this extensive? The break in proceedings today might be the calm before the storm. Tomorrow, presumably, Jane will face more cross-examination. The defense will continue trying to chip away at her credibility. The prosecution will do redirect, trying to rehabilitate any damage done, and Combs will sit there watching his life story get rewritten in real time. For those of us watching from the outside, this trial is a reminder that power corrupts, that systems of exploitation can hide in plain sight, and that eventually, allegedly, karma comes calling. Even for the man who once rapped about how he thought he told you that we won't stop, turns out sometimes you do stop. Sometimes you stop hard. As we wait for tomorrow's proceedings, one thing is clear. However this trial ends, Sean Combs' legacy is forever changed. The mogul who taught us about the Benjamins is learning that all the money in the world can't buy you freedom when the feds come knocking. The man who promised to be missing you might soon be the one who's missed, serving serious time for allegedly serious crimes. Today might have been quiet in the courtroom, but the storm is far from over. And when that final verdict comes down, it won't just be about one man's guilt or innocence. It'll be about whether powerful men can still operate with impunity in a world that's finally starting to listen to their alleged victims. Stay tuned, because this story is far from over, and the ending might surprise us all.
In a world where the darkest secrets lie just beneath the surface.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence says otherwise.
Where hidden killers roam unnoticed in the shadows.
I think you would definitely be looking at a blend of toxic, very bad narcissistic personality traits, and they will be vengeful and possibly resort to violence.
Join Tony Bruschi as he uncovers the truth behind the most chilling cases.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence clearly says otherwise.
Each episode, we dig deep into the minds of those who commit the unthinkable.
To your point on narcissism, he thinks in his own mind how witty he is.
Yeah.
But he lost that jury. I was done with him in 2 minutes.
From unsolved mysteries to infamous crimes.
Geez, you've just talked about how you taught yourself how to do everything under the sun. I bet you did a YouTube video, how to best kill somebody with a knife.
Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi takes you where few dare to go.
How does someone with such a dark secret go unnoticed for so long?
With multiple new episodes every single day.
We're not just telling stories, we're seeking justice.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
I can't tell you how often I hear, oh, I'm a little OCD. I like things neat. That's not OCD. I'm Howie Mandel, and I know this because I have OCD. Actual OCD causes relentless, unwanted thoughts. What if I did something terrible and forgot? What if I'm a bad person? Why am I thinking this terrible thing? It makes you question absolutely everything, and you'll do anything to feel better. OCD is debilitating, but it's also highly treatable with the right kind of therapy. Regular talk therapy doesn't cut it. OCD needs specialized therapy. That's why I want to tell you about NoCD. NoCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for OCD. Their licensed therapists provide specialized therapy virtually, and it's covered by insurance for over 155 million Americans. If you think you might be struggling with OCD, visit NoCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call and learn more. That's NoCD.com.